This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today marking history. 2 years ago, rioters stormed the U.S. Capitol over the 2020 election results. And just a warning, this sound may be disturbing for some listeners.
And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
We've been told in the events that have been spotted, protesters are inside the Capitol building.
Multiple Capitol injuries.
Guess what? America showed up.
If I give this up, they're going to have direct access. At least this Capitol we can defend. We got to hold what we have.
We had a disbursement of tear gas in the rotunda. Please be advised, there are masks under your seats.
This is now effectively a riot.
1349 hours declaring it a riot.
This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special.
Donald Trump's own White House counsel, his own White House staff, members of his own family, all implored him to immediately intervene to condemn the violence and instruct his supporters to stand down, leave the Capitol, and disperse. For multiple hours, he would not.
To me, his refusal to act and call off the mob that day and his refusal to condemn the violence was indefensible.
Sound from CNN, NBC News, The New York Times, and Twitter videos that were replayed on multiple outlets that day and after. Congressman Seth Moulton talked to WBUR from the Capitol as the insurrection was unfolding. He talked to Radio Boston 1 year later, and this morning he joined us again. And we started by playing him that sound you just heard and asking him how it makes him feel on January 6th, 2023.
It's still incredibly powerful. It hits home, and it hits home not just because I was here, but because I love our country. And this was one of the worst days in American history. You think about what happened. You think about the fact that this riotous group entered our Capitol, something that never even happened during the Civil War. We've had other days that will live in infamy, like President Roosevelt famously said about Pearl Harbor in 1941. We remember the Civil War when our country was under attack by an organized army. But never before has our democracy been assaulted by the very leader that we elected. That's how dangerous January 6th was for our country. And it still hurts.
Congressman Moulton, so when I spoke with you 1 year ago today, one of the things that struck me was you told me you were actually doing a little bit better about it all right after it happened than 1 year later. And I was thinking about the fact that a lot has happened again in the next year since. You expressed real concern last year for what might happen in the 2022 elections. Many had that trepidation. So a year later, November 22 elections are done. How would you compare the place we're in with our democracy, our stability today versus a year ago?
Well, on the first January 7th, I was optimistic because the day after the insurrection, there was actually bipartisan consensus in this terribly divided place, in divided Washington. In our divided Congress, there was bipartisan consensus that we have to come together to make sure that this never happens again. Now, a year ago, 1 year after January 6th, much of that consensus, most of it, in fact, had evaporated. Republicans changed their tune. They wanted to deny what happened. They wanted to protect and defend the people who had assaulted our democracy. And most of all, they wanted to protect and defend the president who had instigated it all. Now, I think to be fair, we have made some progress over the past year. You know, several Oath Keepers have been convicted of seditious conspiracy. There's a sedition trial of the Proud Boys leadership that's underway right now. I think the January 6th committee was successful in showing us all the truth about just how horrific that day was. And in total, about 335 people, criminals, have received sentencing in relation to the January 6th attacks. Maybe most importantly, we passed the Electoral Count Act that clarifies the vice president's limited role in the counting of electoral votes to prevent this whole situation from even being conceived in the future. But at the end of the day, we are a country of laws. We are a country where nobody, no matter what your rank or position, is above the law. And while 335 attackers are serving sentences, the people who started this, specifically the President of the United States, he's not in prison. He hasn't been charged.
So can I assume that you'd like to see the Department of Justice act on the four criminal referrals made by the January 6th committee pertaining to former President Trump?
Yes, of course they should. Because President Trump is not above the law, just like you or I, none of us are above the law. And I don't think that the Justice Department would be sitting on four criminal referrals for Tiziana or for Seth and not charging us, especially if they were as serious as the ones for Donald Trump. We have to do the work of justice. The work of justice must continue, or January 6th can happen again.
So is it that you don't think that would be destabilizing if the Department of Justice acts, or that you think there's a risk of destabilization, but it's a risk that's worth taking given the need to enforce the rule of law?
It's a risk that's worth taking. It's the right thing to do. And you have to think about the long term here. This is not about just what's happening today or tomorrow. I mean, even in the midst of the Republican chaos in the House of Representatives, it's happening as we speak. We have to think about the future of our country, the long-term future of our country. There were a lot of times during the Civil War when you could have argued that Lincoln was too harsh, or moving too quickly. Why did he have to pass the Emancipation Proclamation? That might have just antagonized the South. But Lincoln was thinking about the future of our country, not just the present. And that's what we have to do today. We cannot just think about the present chaos we see in Washington. We cannot just think about the past as we memorialize January 6th. We must think about the country that we're leaving for our children, the country of the future, the America that must endure, that can never have January 6th happen again.
We're talking to Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton about January 6th, 2 years ago, the failed insurrection here on Radio Boston. You talked about the Republican chaos in the House of Representatives, and I want to ask you about that. I want to ask you if you follow a direct thread from January 6th, 2021, to what is happening as of last night, 11 failed votes for a Speaker of the House with rebellion inside the Republican Party. Especially by a number of people who were controversial in their roles in January 6th, 2021. Do you see there's a direct tie?
There is a tie. Now, I don't want to minimize the attack on our democracy that happened on January 6th, 2020 by equating the two. And what we're seeing today is chaos within a party, but it is part of the democratic process. It's representative of the tremendous divides in our country. And it's representative of the right-wing faction of conservatives in America, Republicans in America, who are trying to take down this government. That's all true. It's not an attack on democracy that's happening today, so I don't want to say it's as serious, but absolutely it's connected. I mean, one of the people who voted against certifying the election, Matt Gaetz, a representative from Florida, someone who was egging on the attackers on January 20th. I mean, he just nominated Donald Trump to be Speaker of the House on the eve of January 6th. He nominated a criminal. So, of course, there's a thread.
I do want to note for listeners, constitutionally, you do not have to be an elected member of the House of Representatives to serve as Speaker of the House. I think that still surprises people sometimes when they find it out. Congressman Moulton, I've been a little struck by, you've talked a couple of times already today about this incredible divide in our country. And I'm struck by the reflection about how this problem right now in Congress could be solved with collaboration with Democrats, and observations that Democrats seem kind of gleefully unwilling to unstick this situation. Does your party see this as a wholly Republican problem?
I mean, by definition, it's a Republican problem. Our nominated leader, Akeem Jeffries of New York, has consistently gotten more votes than the Republicans nominated leader Kevin McCarthy. I mean, every vote that we've had, we're on the 12th or 13th now, Hakeem Jeffries has gotten 212 votes in the House of Representatives, and Kevin McCarthy in second place has only gotten about 200.
But
trust me, there's a lot of us who recognize the danger this presents to our country. And yes, we talk all the time. I was just talking with colleagues this morning about whether there's anything we can do to get this done, to bring this to a conclusion. But Republicans don't want to deal with us. I mean, the natural solution would be just to say, let's elect the leader who has the most votes today and has had the most votes in every speaker election we've had.
Another natural solution, Congressman, would be to form a coalition around a neutral third person. I recognize there's no shop set up around that. Staffing, it presents its own problems. I do wonder, and I was thinking about this morning in preparing to talk with you. You know, you're a member of the House Armed Services Committee. We understand that this is increasingly a national security issue for us as well. Is there any moment where anything other than 212 people keep voting for Hakeem Jeffries, where Democrats say that this is dangerous and we have to do something different? And would you do something different? Is there a moment where you would do that?
We have been saying that this is dangerous for days now. And I mean, sure, there was some laughter at the Republican dysfunction on day one, but there hasn't been laughter the last 2 days. We've been concerned for our country, but the Republicans don't want to talk to us. They're trying to sort this out themselves. They think that they can figure this out on their own, even though they have one faction represented by these extremists who will never vote for Kevin McCarthy, they say. And you have Kevin McCarthy and all his allies who won't realize and see the writing on the wall that he can't win and step down so that we might actually find the kind of compromise candidate that you describe.
Can we bring it home again for a minute, Congressman? All of this is echoing in my head. We're speaking on January 6th, 2023. January 5th, 2023. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts inaugurates a new governor and lieutenant governor in Maura Healey and Kim Driscoll, who represent a number of firsts. And there's a sort of a sense of maybe short-lived, we don't know, unity and progress in the state. Do we have a moment of Massachusetts exceptionalism, or is it just that we're so party-aligned that it was a sort of a peaceful, progressive moment yesterday because, you know, the House, the Senate, the constitutional offices, all held by Democrats? Or are we unified here in the Commonwealth in a way that's different in the country, in your mind?
I think we're way more unified. I think we're setting an example for the country, as we have so many times throughout our history, from the very beginnings of Massachusetts. The first pilgrims, the founders of the country, the revolution that literally started in our state. And the story of unity in Massachusetts is not just about the first that we proudly see in our new governor and lieutenant governor, but about the fact that for years we've had a Republican governor in Democratic Massachusetts that we work with, that we like, that's been a great leader for our Commonwealth. That doesn't seem to happen elsewhere in America today. And that's a problem. But it's also a reason why Massachusetts has to continue to lead. And I think that's exactly what Governor Healey is going to do.
So last question for you. What's the personal moment you want to spend today to mark 2 years out from the failed insurrection attempt on January 6th, 2021?
I'm going to be thanking the Capitol Police. I'm going to be thanking those who held the line. They weren't as prepared as they should have been. They weren't as informed as they should have been. There are a lot of problems that we can discuss, but at the end of the day, some great Americans tried to defend all of us who were trying to represent the people of America in the House of Representatives. I couldn't do my job to serve all of you if not for brave Americans like those who serve in the Capitol Police.
Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, thanks so much and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Tiziana.
Joan Donovan also joined us in the days following the insurrection and on January 6th last year, same time last year that we spoke with Seth Moulton. So we checked in with her again, too. She's with us now. She's research director of the Harvard Kennedy School's Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy. Joan, welcome back and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year.
So let's just start, Joan, briefly with your reactions to what you heard from Congressman Seth Moulton.
I think he's right that this is a historic moment that has been fairly unresolved. It was a big December getting all of the January 6th committee documents and testimonies put into the public domain here. It's been very illuminating to hear in people's own words what they thought was happening that day and how they thought this was one of the most important political moments for them to try to overthrow an election. So in many respects, I think the January 6th committee putting that information into the public domain is going to lead to a lot more dots being connected between different actors. And then hopefully the DOJ is going to be able to strengthen some of those cases they have against some of the people that are arrested or some of the people that may need to be arrested.
So you're an expert on online extremism, Joan. You just referred to the situation as fairly unresolved. Let's jump local for a second here. So more than 920 people, 48 states have been charged, including roughly 20 here in New England. Just for a couple examples, you've got former Natick town official Suzanne Ianni. You've got Noah Bacon from Somerville, both charged with variations of disorderly conduct. We've got Vincent Gillespie of Athol, who's charged and found guilty of assaulting a police officer. Locally, here in Massachusetts, with those who were involved, are we still fairly unresolved, or do you feel like the Commonwealth is where it should be?
I think that there's some few things that, you know, court cases that are open, especially the woman who was arrested and there's police camera footage of her assaulting an officer. I do think that that's going to, you know, be an important case for understanding where extremism lies. It, from what I understand, she was 68 years old at the time. That she threw this haymaker. And it strikes me that when we think about who was there and what the damage done was, is that we're looking at a very wide swath of everyday folks that were fed up with government and were willing to go and do something about it. There's also the case of the two people from this local group called Super Happy Fun America that also organizes the straight pride parade marches.
Suzanne Ianni that we mentioned is one of those.
Is one of those. And yeah, so I think that there's, you know, this is going to affect activism locally in important ways because there will be likely an effect where people are going to be wary of the consequences of trying to pull off something like this. But ultimately, what we've been seeing in trends of extremist or far-right groups, activism, Massachusetts, unfortunately, is a big hotspot for that because of a local group called NSC 131, which I think stands for National Socialist Club.
I think it's the Nationalist Social Club, I think.
Yes, yes. And so what that means is that because these people do reside in Massachusetts and in New Hampshire, that we are going to see and have seen an uptick in local activism around some of these issues. And when it comes to Boston area, fortunately, there are many different kinds of community groups and activists that are willing to call this out and stand up for community rights. And so that has been heartening. But unfortunately, it speaks to the larger vitriol that certain very small groups of people, but very active groups have against different kinds of Americans. And I think that that January 6th moment was a very potent activator for people who thought this was going to be the most important political action they could take possibly in their lifetimes.
So I want to pick up on that activator, and I'm just going to backtrack for a second for folks. I believe you were talking about Dr. Jacqueline Starer of Ashland, who was arrested in December, when you talked about the, you know, the video. So let's talk about this activation, Joan. One of the times over the last couple of years that we spoke with you, you talked about sort of the pushing of activism, extreme right-wing activism to the local level, to municipal elections, school boards, those kinds of things. You just made reference to the professed Nazi group that's been protesting Drag Queen Story Hours. Of course, there was the march of the white supremacy group over 4th of July weekend here in Massachusetts. So in our remaining minute, and that's really what we've got, this activation, are we as activated on the white supremacy and extremist side as we were 2 years ago, or has that been mitigated at all?
I don't think it's been mitigated, but I do think it's assumed new forms. It's moved beyond these patriot type marches that are shows of solidarity and might, and has become much more targeted at local community events, particularly, you know, Drag Queen Story Hour, other LGBTQ events, and in particular the issues that we've been having with Boston Children's Hospital. And I think that this is all connected, unfortunately.
And just for listeners, Boston Children's Hospital experiencing bomb threats purportedly over their transgender health care services. That's Joan Donovan, Research Director of the Harvard Kennedy School Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy. I always learn when you're on, Joan. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.